"That, my friend, is the soul of the Farallon," said Gwalchmai. Galen turned to his comrade and grinned. "I can believe it." Gwalchmai's face shone with pride, and his green eyes glittered. "Everything we are is contained there," he said. "All the poetry, the grandeur, and the strength that is Clan." Galen watched him as he soaked in the sight. Gwalchmai was not built on the same powerful lines as Lennox or Lane. He was slight and bird-boned, his face almost delicate. But in his eye shone the same strength Galen had come to see in all clansmen, a sense of belonging that rooted them to the land, allowing them to draw on its power. "Come on, Gwal, let's find the clues," he said at last, and the two of them re-entered the timberline. By mid-afternoon they had found nothing, and then Gwalchmai discovered a set of tracks that set him cursing loudly. "What is it?" asked Galen. "Hunters?" "No," snapped Gwalchmai. "It's Agwain. They reached here this morning. That's why there are no clues. He's taken them, curse it." "Let's follow them," said Galen. "We have nothing to lose." The trail led south, and was easy to follow. After less than an hour, they reached a gentle slope, masked by thick bushes. Here, Gwalchmai stopped.
"Oh, my soul," he whispered. "Look."
Overlaid upon the moccasin tracks was a huge print, six-toed, and as long as a man's forearm. Pale-faced, Gwalchmai looked at Galen.
"Are we going up the slope?"
"I don't want to," answered his friend. "But is there a choice?" He licked dry lips with a dry tongue. Slowly they made their way to the top of the slope and entered a grove of pine. The sun was sinking slowly, and long shadows stretched away from them.
"The beast was upon them here,"
hissed Gwalchmai.
"Oh, gods, I think it killed them all. Look at the tracks. See, they scattered to run, but not before one was downed. Look, there, the blood. Oh, God!"
Galen could feel his heart racing and his breathing becoming shallow. The beginning of panic. Caswellan had told him to breathe deeply and slowly at such times, and now he did so, calming himself gradually. Gwalchmai was inching his way into the bushes, where he stood and covered his face with his hands at what he saw lying there. Galen joined him. His stomach turned, and bile filled his throat. He swallowed hard. Inside the screen of bushes were the remains of three bodies, mutilated beyond recognition. A leg was half buried in rotting leaves, and a split skull lay open and drained beside it. Everywhere was drenched in blood. Gwalchmai stumbled back from the sight and vomited onto the grass. Galen forced himself to look once more, then he rejoined Gwalchmai, who was shivering uncontrollably.
"Gwal, listen to me. We must know where the beast is gone. Check the tracks, please."
There was no indication that Gwalchmai had heard him. Galen took him by the shoulders and shook him gently. "Gwal, listen to me. We must find out. Then we'll tell Lane. Can you hear me?" Gwalchmai began to weep, slumping forward against Galen, who put his arms around him, patting his back as with a child.
"It's all right," he whispered.
After a few moments, Gwalchmai pulled away, breathing deeply.
"I'm sorry," he said,
drying his eyes on his sleeve.
"That's all right, cousin," said Galen. "They were your friends." "Yes. All right. Let's see where the swine went."
For several minutes, Gwalchmai circled the scene of the massacre. Then he returned.
"The beast waited for them, hidden at the top of the slope. It reared up and killed the first as he cleared the top. The second, it was Ectus, I think, turned to run, and he too was slain. The other two ran west.
The beast overtook one of them, but the fourth, Agwain, got clear. The beast has followed him now. But first, it ate.
So, said Galen, the creature is in the west. Now, let's find Lane.
Gwalchmai nodded and set off north in a loping run, his green eyes fixed to the trail. Galen ran just behind him, eyes flickering to the undergrowth around them. Fate was with them, and they found the brothers within the hour. They were sitting by a stream. Swiftly Galen explained about the slaughter.
How long ago did this happen?
Lane asked Gwalchmai.
This morning, while we sat on the beach. I think the beast was following us, but when we cut away to the waterside, it picked up Agwain's trail.
Do you think Agwain survived?
He certainly survived the first attack, for the beast returned to the bodies. But then it set out after him once more. What kind of creature is it, anyway? I mean, it's fed. Why hunt Agwain?
I don't know. But we must help our cousin.
We will not help him by dying, brother, observed Lennox. Wall says the beast has gone west. If we follow, the wind will be behind us, carrying our scent forward, and we will be walking straight towards it.
I know that's true, said Lane, yet we cannot leave Agwain.
Would you mind a suggestion from a lowlander? Galen asked. Lane turned to him.
You're not a lowlander, cousin. Speak on.
Thank you. But I am not as wise in these things as the rest of you, so my plan may be flawed. But I think we should find a hiding place where we can watch the food store. Once the beast has returned, unless the wind changes, we should then be able to travel west without it picking up the scent.
What do you think?
I think you're more clan than you realize, said Lane.
They left the stream at a brisk run and headed for the line of hills less than half a mile distant, Lane leading, Galen and Gwalchmai just behind, and Lennox at the rear.
Once on the hillside, they settled down on their bellies to watch the trail. From their vantage point, they could see clearly all the way to the lake above the falls and beyond, while to the northwest, a range of rocky hills cut the skyline. Above them, the sky was red as blood, as the sun sank to the level of the western mountain peaks.
I hope it comes back before nightfall, said Lane.
Luck was with them, for in the last rays of the dying sun, Gwalchmai spotted the beast ambling on all fours along the trail. It moved carefully, hugging the shadows before disappearing into the bushes where the corpses lay. The companions wormed their way back down the slope, cutting a wide circle round the beast's lair, before picking up its trail and beginning the long process of backtracking it to the west. They ran through the timberline and on towards the rocky hills. The moon had risen before they arrived, but the night sky was clear, and Gwalchmai pointed up to the boulder-covered hillside.
I think Agwain sought refuge in the caves, he said,
and they climbed the slope, seeking sign.
We must bear in mind, said Lane, that the beast will come back tonight after it has fed.
It was Galen who found the boy, wedged deep in a narrow cleft in the rocks, halfway up the slope.
Agwain! Are you all right? He called.
Sweet gods! I thought it was the beast come back, said Agwain.
Tears rolled down his cheeks, and he gritted his teeth to strangle the sobs he knew were close to the surface. Galen reached down as Agwain climbed closer, and he pulled him clear as the others gathered round. Agwain was unhurt, but his face showed the strain he had endured. His eyes seemed sunken, and blue rings stained the sockets.
It came at us from nowhere, he said. It beheaded Kale. Ectus was next. As he tried to run, the beast opened his bat with one sweep of its talons. There was nothing to do but run. I was at the back, and I turned and sprinted away. Treek was right behind me. I heard his screaming, but it was cut short and I knew I was the only one left. I could hear it chasing me, and I ran as never before. It found me here, but it couldn't reach me.
We must get away, cousin, put in Lane.
Yes, no. First I must get something,
I threw it away as we ran.
We can't go back in those woods, hissed Gwalchmai.
We must. It's not far. I threw it as I saw the slope. What can be that important? Asked Lane. Even now the beast may be coming. You set off then, and I'll catch up, said Agwain. Damn you, cousin, you know we cannot do that. Let's find the cursed thing, said Galen. I don't want to spend all night discussing this.
Agwain led them back to the woods. Galen was furious, but he held himself in check. He knew what Agwain was seeking. The sword. Agwain had found the sword. The woods loomed dark and threatening, and the boys drew their knives. Little good would they be, thought Galen. He glanced at Gwalchmai. His friend's face was pinched and ashen in the moonlight. Only Lennox seemed unconcerned. Agwain held up his arm and then stopped. The hunt lord's son disappeared into the bushes, returning quickly with a long, closely tied package. "Let's go," he said, and led them away down towards the falls. The shifting wind made them take wide detours to avoid their scent being carried to the beast, and dawn found them below Atterfoss, with the river to the left, a section of woods before them. They were tired, but the fear of the beast was upon them, and they hesitated before entering the wood. Daggers held firm, they walked warily, but as they moved under the overhanging branches, a voice jolted them. Gwalchmai dropped his dagger in fright, then scooped it up swiftly.
"Good morning, boys."
To their right, in a circular clearing, a woman was sitting on a fallen oak. At her feet was a blanket on which was laid a breakfast of black bread and cold meat. She was dressed in a manner they had never seen before. Upon her shoulders was a mail scarf of closely linked silver rings. Beneath this, she wore a fitted breastplate of silver, embossed with a copper hawk, its wings spread wide, disappearing beneath the mail scarf. Around her waist was a leather kilt, studded with copper, and split into sections for ease of movement. She wore dark leggings and silver greaves over riding boots. Her arms were bare, save for a thick bracelet of silver on her right wrist. On her left was a wrist guard of black leather. And she was old. Thick silver hair swept back from her face, lined with wisdom and sorrow. But her eyes were bright ice blue, and her bearing straight and unbending. Galen watched her closely, noting the way she looked at them all. She must have been beautiful when young, he thought. But there was something in her expression he could not pinpoint. It seemed a mixture of wonder and regret.
"Will you join me for breakfast?" she invited. "Who are you?" asked Agwain.
The woman smiled.
"I am Sigarni, the queen," she said. "We have no queens in the Farlane," said Lane. "I am the queen beyond," she said with a slow smile. "You are on Farlane land," Agwain told her sternly. "No stranger is allowed here. Are you from the Anir?"
"No, Agwain. I am the guest of the Lord Taliesin."
"Can you prove this?"
"I don't feel the need to.
You boys are here on the hunt. Taliesin asked if he could borrow my sword for it. You open the package, you will find it. A beautiful weapon of metal which one of you will have seen. The hilt is of ebony and shaped for a warrior to hold with both hands, while the guard is of iron decorated with gold and silver thread. The scabbard is embossed with a hawk, even as on my breastplate. Now open the package and return what is mine."
"Open it," said Lane. "If it is true, then the sword must be returned to its rightful owner."
"No, it is mine," said Agwain, flushing. "I won the hunt and this is my proof."
"You don't need proof," said Galen. "We know you won. The sword is only a symbol. Open the package."
Agwain drew his dagger and sliced the leather thongs binding the oilskins. As the woman had predicted, the sword was indeed a wondrous weapon. Reluctantly, Agwain handed it over. The woman swiftly buckled the scabbard to her waist. Had there been any doubt as to the ownership? It was laid to rest as she placed it at her side. It was like watching a picture completed, thought Galen. The sword in place, she returned to her seat on the tree. She gestured at the food. "Come, eat your fill," she said. "I was expecting 8 of you. Where are the others?" The boys exchanged glances. "They are dead," said Galen.
"Dead?" asked the Queen, rising to her feet gracefully. "How so?"
Galen told of the beast and their flight from the mountains.
"Damn,"
she said.
"Taliesin came to me in a dream yester-eve. He told me you were lost upon the mountain, and I should seek you here. He said nothing of a beast."
"He came to me also," said Galen, "and he said nothing of a queen." She smiled without humour.
"So be it, then. The ways of wizards are a mystery to me, and I pray they'll stay that way. Now, describe this creature."
All of them started to speak at once, but she waved them to silence and pointed to Egwene.
"You saw it closely. You speak."
Egwene did as he was bid, recalling vividly the power of the brute and its awesome size, its speed, and its semi-human appearance.
"You're right to consider running," said the woman when he had finished. "I have seen the like of the beast before in my own kingdom, more than once. They are terrible, and hard to slay. Although it kills to eat, once it has fixed on a prey, it will pursue it damn near forever. This beast has, in a way, been hunting me for 40 years.
"Why you?" whispered Galen.
"It was sent a long time ago by a sorcerer named Jakuta Khan. But that is a story for another day, Galen."
"What can we do?" asked Lane.
"You can eat breakfast and put some strength in your limbs. Then we will plan for battle."
The companions seated themselves at her feet and dug into the loaves and meat. The bread tasted fresh-baked, and the beef was tender and pink. They ate without gusto, except for Lennox, who tore great chunks of bread and crammed them into his mouth. The Queen watched him, eyebrows raised.
"You were perhaps expecting a famine."
"Either that or he's going to cause one," observed Gwalchmai.
Egwene said nothing. The appearance of this strange woman had angered him, and he was loath to hand over the great sword, their only real defence against the beast, to a woman.
"How will we fight this beast?" asked Lane.
"How indeed?" she replied, her pale eyes showing sorrow.
"We could make spears," suggested Galen, "by fastening our daggers to poles."
"Come to that, I could make a bow," said Gwal. "It wouldn't be a great weapon or very accurate, but it might serve at close range."
"Then do it swiftly," said the Queen, "and we will talk again."
The boys rose and spread out nervously into the woods, searching for saplings or stout, straight branches. Galen and Egwene selected an infant elm and began to hack at it with their daggers.
"What do you think of her, Lowlander?"
Egwene asked as the sapling snapped.
"I think she's what she says she is," snapped Galen.
"And if you call me Lowlander again, you'll answer for it."
Egwene grinned.
"I don't like you, Galen, but you're right. Whatever your pedigree, you are now a clansman. But I'll never call you cousin."
"I don't care about that," Galen told him. "You are nothing to me."
"So be it."
They stripped the sapling of twigs and leaves and shortened it to a manageable 5 feet. Then Galen unwound the thongs of his right legging and bound his knife to the wood. He hefted it for balance and hurled it at a nearby tree. The spear hammered home with a dull thud. Galen tugged it loose and examined the binding. It remained firm. It seemed a formidable weapon, but he summoned the image of the beast to mind, and then the spear seemed puny indeed.
"Were you surprised I found the sword?" Egwene asked him.
"No."
"Disappointed?" "That was a good trick with a pack."
"I'm glad you enjoyed it."
"I didn't, but it was good anyway."
Galen nodded. He waited while Egwene fashioned his spear then wandered away. He didn't enjoy Agwain's company, and he knew the feeling was reciprocated. He made his way back to the clearing where the old woman sat. She was deep in thought, and Galen watched her for some time from the edge of the woods. It was easy to believe she was a queen, for her bearing was proud and confident, and she was clearly used to being obeyed. But there was more to her than that, a kind of innate nobility, an inner strength, which shone through.
"Are you going to stand there, old Dee, Galen?"
she asked, without moving her head. Galen stepped forward. "How did you know I was here? And how do you know my name?"
"Let's leave it at the first question. I heard you. Come and join me for a while and eat something. To work efficiently, the body must be fed."
"Are you no longer a queen?" asked Galen, sitting himself cross-legged before her. The woman chuckled and shook her head.
"A queen is always a queen. Only death can change that. But I am at present without a realm. Yet I hope to return soon. I promised my people I would, just as my father did before me."
"Why did you leave your land?" Galen asked.
"I was wounded and likely to die. And so the prophecy was fulfilled and my captain sought the gate and passed me through. Taliesin healed me."
"How were you wounded?"
"In a battle."
She looked away, her eyes distant.
"Did you win?"
"I always win, Galen," she said sadly. "My friends die, and yet I win.
Winning is a hard habit to break. You can come to feed on it to the exclusion of all else."
"Is that a bad thing?"
"Not when you're young," she said, smiling again. "Why have you stayed up here, and not in the village?"
"As I told you, I am a guest of the Lord Taliesin. He felt it would be wiser to remain near Valon. Now, enough of your questions. Look around you. Is this a good place to feast the beast?"
"Is there a good place?" countered Galen.
"There are places you should avoid. Like open ground."
"Is here a good place?"
"Not bad. You have the trees to shield you, and yet there is no dense undergrowth, so it cannot creep up on you unnoticed."
"Except at night," said Galen.
"Indeed. But it will be over, for good or ill, long before then."
"What about you? You have no spear."
The queen smiled.
"I have my sword. It has been with me these 40 years. I thought it had been left behind when I passed through the gateway, but Taliesin brought it to me. It is a fine weapon."
Lennox came into view carrying an enormous club of oak.
"I found this," he said. "It will do for me."
The queen laughed loud.
"There is nothing subtle about you, Lennox, my lad, nor ever will be. Indeed, it is a fine weapon."
Gwalchmai had fashioned a short bow, and had found 6 pieces of wood straight enough to slice into shafts for it.
"It's a clumsy thing," he said, "and the range will be no greater than 20 paces.
Squatting down, he began to shape pieces of bark into flights for his arrows. By noon they had completed their preparations, and they sat waiting for the woman's instructions. But she said nothing, merely sitting among them slowly chewing the last of the bread. Galen caught the queen's eye, and she smiled, raising an eyebrow questioningly. He turned to Gwalchmai.
"You are the lightest of us, Gwal. Why don't you climb that tree and keep a watch for the creature?"
Gwalchmai nodded.
"Wouldn't the oak be better? It's more sturdy."
"The beast might be able to climb," said Galen. "The elm would never support its weight."
"How will you tackle it, when it comes?"
asked the queen, staring at Galen.
"We must confuse it," he said, his mind racing.
He had no idea how 5 boys and an old woman should tackle a creature of such speed and strength, but the queen asked him a question and seemed to expect a rational reply. If we spread out, the beast must attack us one at a time. Each time it does, one or all the others must stab at it, turning the creature always. Gwal, you will stay in the tree, he called to the climbing boy. Shoot when you have a clear target.
That is all good thinking, said the queen. But even so, to confuse the beast, you must surprise it. Once it is sighted and we know which direction it is coming from, you must hide yourself, forming a rough circle. But one of you must act as bait and stay in plain sight. With luck, the beast will charge. I've seen that before. Ideally, we must make it charge onto a spear. That way, its weight will carry the point home far more powerfully than any thrust of yours.
I will be the bait, said Galen, surprising himself.
Why you? Asked Egwene. I'm the fastest here, and I've outrun it before.
Speed is not usually required of bait, Galen told him. Egwene chuckled and shook his head.
All right. I will stay on your right. Lennox and Lane can take the left, and may God give us luck. Do not ask for luck. Ask for courage, said the queen. How will you fight? Egwene asked her.
With my sword, she replied softly, as I always have, against man and beast. Don't worry about me, boy.
Why should you fight for us at all?
That is a mystery you will one day understand, but it is not for me to explain to you.
It's coming, called Gwalchmai from high in the elm. They could all see where he was pointing. The beast was moving from the northwest.
Take up positions, said the woman.
Lennox and Lane ran to the left, crouching behind a large bush. Egwene moved to the right, spear held before him, and squatted behind the bole of an oak. High in the elm, Gwalchmai strung his bow, hooked his leg round a thick branch, and wedged himself in position, notching an arrow to the string. The queen drew her sword and held the blade to her lips. Then she smiled at Galen. "This should be something to tell your five children," she said. Galen did not reply. Some 50 paces ahead, the beast had come into view. This close, it seemed even more colossal. Seeing Galen, the creature reared up to its full height and bellowed a blood-curdling howl. Then it dropped to all fours and charged. The boy glanced to his left, seeking assurance from the warrior, but the queen had gone. The ground beneath Galen's feet shook as the beast thundered towards him. He gripped his spear and waited, all fear vanishing like mist in a breeze. In that moment, a strange euphoria gripped him. All his life he had been alone, afraid and unhappy. Now he was part of something. He belonged. Even if his life had to end in the next moments, nothing could take away the joy he had known in these last few precious months. He was no longer alone. He was Clan. The beast slowed, rearing to its full height with arms spread, fangs gleaming in the morning sun. Galen gripped his spear firmly, muscles tensed for the thrust. The beast came on, drawing abreast of the hidden Egwene. Fear swept over the Hunt Lord's son, shrouding him in a tidal wave of panic. He wanted to run, to hide. But he, too, was Clan. Rising up from his hiding place as the creature's shadow fell across him, Egwene rammed the spear into the beast's side. A blood-chilling scream filled the clearing. Egwene vainly tried to pull his weapon clear. A taloned arm swept backhanded, punching the boy from his feet. He hit the ground on his face and rolled to his back. The beast stepped over him, jaws slavering and talons reaching out. Egwene screamed. At that moment, Lane raced from the left, hurling his spear with all his strength. The weapon flashed through the air to bury itself in the beast's broad back. It came upright, swinging to meet the new attack. Behind it, Egwene tried to stand, but his legs gave way and he pitched to the earth, nausea filling his throat. Lane, weaponless, stood transfixed as the beast bore down on him. Lennox grabbed him by the shirt and hauled him aside, then stood waiting for the creature, his club raised, his eyes defiant. Galen ran into attack, screaming at the top of his voice. The beast's black eyes flickered towards the charging boy, and in that moment Lennox struck, stepping forward to thunder the oak club against the creature's head. It staggered, but blocked Lennox's next blow with a raised arm. Galen's spear sliced into the flesh above its hip, then broke, pitching the boy to the ground at the monster's feet. Now only Lennox remained in the fight. The young giant hit once more, but this time the beast was ready. It parried the blow with its paw, and a taloned hand gripped the youth's upper arm, smashing the bone and ripping the flesh from the shoulder. Lennox staggered back, but did not fall. Transferring the club to his right hand, he waited for the beast's next attack. An arrow cut deep into the monster's thigh, causing it to bellow in pain and rage. A second glance from its thick skull. Lennox crashed his club into the creature's mouth, but a backhanded blow hurled him from his feet. Injured though the beast was, none of the wounds were mortal, and the battle had turned. From his precarious position in the tree, Gwalchmai fired a third shaft, which buried itself in the ground by the beast's right foot. Leaning out for the fourth shot, the young archer toppled from the branch, landing on his back. Running behind the beast, Galen grabbed Lane's spear and plucked it from the creature's back. As it turned, he stabbed at its face, the point slashing a jagged line up and into the sensitive nostrils. To Galen's right, Lane gathered up Lennox's club and tried to help, but the monster turned on him, slashing the boy's chest. The talons snaked out again. Galen leapt backwards, tumbling to the earth. The beast's jaws opened, and another terrifying howl pierced the air. The boys were finished.
"Oh, hell spawn!"
shouted the queen. The beast swung ponderously, glittering black eyes picking out the tall, armoured figure at the centre of the clearing.
"No face me."
She stood with feet apart, her silver sword before her. The beast reared to its full height, 8 feet of black, merciless destruction. Before its power, the woman seemed to Galen a frail, tiny figure. The monster moved forward slowly, then charged, dropping to all fours. The queen sidestepped, her silver sword swung, arcing down to rebound from the creature's skull, slicing its scalp and sending a blood spray into the air. The beast twisted, launching itself in a mighty spring, but the woman leapt to the right, the sword cutting across the creature's chest to open a shallow wound. Agwain crawled to where Galen crouched.
"She cannot win," whispered the hunt lord's son. "Run, boys!" yelled the queen.
But they did not. Galen scooped up the broken spear, while Lane helped Lennox to his feet and gathered once more the club of oak. The old woman was breathing hard now. Taliesin had stitched her wounds, but her strength was not what it was. Under the breastplate, stitches had parted, and blood oozed down her belly. Sweat bathed her face, and her mouth was set in a grim line. Once more the beast reared above her. Once more she hammered the sword in its face. The creature shook its head, blood spraying into the air. The woman knew she could last but a little longer, while the creature was only maddened by the cuts it had received. A plan formed in her mind and weighed down her heart. It had been her hope to return to her realm and lead it out of the darkness of war. Now there would be no going home. No future. No golden days of peace, watching the nation prosper. In that final moment, as the creature prepared to attack once more, it was as if time slowed. Sigarni could smell the forest, the musky brown earth, the freshness of the breeze. Images leapt to her mind, and she saw again the handsome forester fell, the first great love of her life. He had died in the battle against the Baron, cut down by the last arrow loosed in that fateful battle. Faces from the past glittered in her memory. Balistar the dwarf, who had sought a new life in a new world. Asmodea, the black battle captain. Obrin the renegade outlander. And Redhawk, above them all. Redhawk.
"I will never see you again," she thought. "Though you promised to be with me at the end. You gave me your word, my love. You promised."
Talons lashed towards her. Ducking beneath him, she leapt back, lifting her sword towards the beast. It sprang forward, but this time the queen did not sidestep. With a savage battle cry, she launched herself into its path, driving the blade deep into the creature's huge chest. The silver steel slid between its ribs, plunging through its lungs and cleaving the heart. As it screamed in its death throes, its great arms encircled the woman. The breastplate buckled under the immense pressure, and the queen's ribs snapped, jagged bone ripping into her. Then the beast released her and toppled to the earth. The woman staggered back, then fell. She struggled to rise, but agony lanced her. The boys ran to her side, Galen kneeling by her and raising her head to lay it on his lap. Gently he stroked the silver hair from her eyes. "Give the word to Taliesin," whispered the queen, blood staining her lips. She coughed weakly and swallowed. "We did it, lads," she said. "You did well, as I knew you would." Agwaine knelt on her right, taking her hand.
"You saved us. You killed it," said Galen.
"Listen to me, for I am dying now. But remember my words. I shall return to the Farlane. You will be older then. Men, warriors, you will have suffered much, and I will aid you again."
Agwaine glanced at Galen.
"What does she mean?"
Galen shrugged.
The sound of running feet echoed in the clearing as Caswellan, Campbell, and the clansmen raced into view. Caswellan knelt by Galen. "Are you all right?"
"Yes. She saved us. She slew the beast."
"Who is she?" asked Caswellan.
The queen's eyes opened.
"Ah, it is you," she whispered, smiling. "Now the circle is complete, for you told me you would be with me at my death. How well you look.
How young, how handsome. No silver in your beard."
Caswellan gazed down into the bright blue eyes and saw that the woman was fading fast. Her hand lifted towards him, and he took it, holding it firm.
"Did I do well, Caswellan? Tell me, truly." "You did well," answered Caswellan. "You saved the boys."
"But my kingdom? Was I truly the queen you desired me to be?"
"Yes," answered Caswellan, nonplussed.
She smiled once more, then a tear formed and slowly fell to her pale cheek.
"Poor Caswellan," she whispered. "You do not know whose hand you hold. But you will."
Tears filled her eyes. Lifting her hand to his lips, he kissed the fingers.
"I know you are brave beyond words," he said, "and I do not doubt you are a queen beyond compare."
Her eyes closed, and a long, broken sigh hissed from her throat. Caswellan sat for a moment, still holding on to the hand. Then he laid it gently across the queen's chest. Campbell knelt beside him.
"Who was she?"
asked the Hunt Lord. Caswellan stared down at the dead warrior woman. "Whoever she was, I mourn her passing."
"She was the queen beyond," said Galen.
"And she always won."
Then he began to weep.
Chapter 5 Lennox sat with his back against a tree as they stitched his shoulder and strapped his broken arm. His face was grey with pain, but he uttered no groan, merely squeezed his eyes shut and gritted his teeth. His father, Leofas, said nothing, but pride shone in his eyes. Lane lay beside his brother, enduring the stitches in his chest in the same stoic fashion. Away from the others sat Bordric, tears flowing, and head in hands. His son, Drake, had been killed the day before. Even through his own immense relief, Campbell felt the other man's sorrow, and leaving his son, Agwain, he walked over to sit beside the hunter. He put his hand on Bordrigg's shoulder.
"I am sorry, my friend. Truly."
The man nodded, but neither lifted his head, nor answered. Caswellan stood with the other clansmen looking down on the beast. Even in death it was a terrifying sight, its great jaws drawn back in a last snarl, its fangs as long as a man's fingers, bared and bloody.
"I have never seen the like," muttered Caswellan, "and I pray I never shall again."
They buried the queen deep, marking the grave with flat white stones. Campbell promised to have a headstone carved. Then the men split into two groups, Bordrigg leading the five hunters back to the falls and burying what was left of the bodies, Campbell, Leofas and Caswellan staying with the boys. It was decided they would rest in the clearing until morning and then attempt the long walk back to the village. The main worry was Lennox, who had lost a great deal of blood. Gwalchmai, though stunned by his fall, was back on his feet and unhurt. He alone of the boys had missed the queen's last battle. That night around the campfire, the boys were unnaturally silent. Lennox, in great pain, sought refuge in sleep, but the others sat together, staring at the flames. Agwain had lost friends and suffered the terror of being hunted. Lane had seen the leadership of the group taken quietly from him by the former lowlander, and Galen had discovered in his heart a strength he had not known existed. Only Gwalchmai was untouched by the drama, but he remained silent, for he sensed his friend's needs. Caswellan prepared a strong broth for them all. His own thoughts were many. Through his sorrow at the death of the three lads, he felt a surging pride at the way the others had tackled the beast, and a sense of joy at the manner in which Galen had conducted himself. Thinking back, he did not know if he could have duplicated the feat at Galen's age. But overriding these thoughts, he could not help but remember the words of the queen. At first he had thought the woman delirious, but her eyes had been clear. Caswellan had always enjoyed an ability to read character truly, and he knew instinctively that the dying warrior was a great woman, a woman of courage, nobility of spirit, and great inner strength. That she was a queen was no surprise. But queen of where? And how did she know him? Beyond the gate? What was beyond the gate? Only Oracle knew. And Taliesin. The night wore on, and Caswellan strolled away from the fire, seeking solitude and a place to think. But Campbell joined him, and they sat together on a high hillside under the clear sky.
"Bordrigg is a broken man," said Campbell softly, gathering his green cloak about his broad shoulders.
"Yes. What can one see?"
"I feel a burden of guilt for it," said Campbell. "Last night I prayed that Agwain would survive. I would willingly have exchanged any life for his. When I saw he was alive, I didn't care anything for Bordrigg's loss. It only struck me later."
"That is understandable."
"Don't patronize me, Caswellan,"
snapped the hunt lord, eyes blazing. "I was not trying to.
How do you think I felt when I saw Galen?" "It's not the same thing, is it? You may be fond of the boy, but he's not of your blood. You didn't watch him take his first faltering steps, hear his first words, take him on his first hunt."
"No, that is true," admitted Caswellan, realizing the futility of the argument.
"Still, Galen did well," said Campbell. "He proved his right to be a clansman."
"Yes,
but he can never be hunt lord."
Caswellan turned then, catching Campbell's eye, but the hunt lord looked away, staring into the woods. At once Caswellan understood the man's meaning. Galen had planned the battle with the beast, had taken over leadership from Lane. Agwain had done his bidding. On such talents were future hunt lords built. Campbell's dream was that Agwain would succeed him, but now he was unsure. Be content that your son is alive, said Caswellan. The future will look to itself.
But you agree it would not be fitting for a lowlander to lead the clan.
The council can decide on the day you step down.
So it is your plan to supplant Agwain with this boy,
accused Campbell, face reddening. Caswellan sighed. Nothing could have been further from my mind.
It was Agwain who found the sword.
Indeed it was. A long silence enveloped them, until at last Campbell stood to leave.
We will never be friends, Caswellan,
he said sadly. You see ogres where there are none, Caswellan told him. I have no ambition, cousin, not for myself nor my sons. They will be what they desire to be, and what they are able to be. I want to see them happy, married well and content. All else is dross, for we all die, and there is no evidence we take anything with us when we go.
Campbell nodded. I wish I could believe you. But I see a different Caswellan. I see a man who could have been Hunt Lord. Children imitate your walk. Tales are told about you around the campfires. And yet what have you done? You steal other men's cattle. What is it about you, Caswellan?
I have no idea. I never listen to the stories. Caswellan watched as Campbell walked slowly down the slope towards the fire. Gathering his own cloak about him, he stared at the stars, mind wandering. After about an hour, he felt a cold wind blow against his neck, but the leaves about him did not stir. He turned. Behind him stood Taliesin, wrapped in his cloak of shimmering feathers and holding a staff of oak entwined with mistletoe.
Three boys are dead, he told the druid, gesturing to a place beside him on the flat boulder.
The druid sat, leaning forward on his staff.
I know. The queen also.
Who was she?
Sigourney the Hawk Queen. Did she say anything before she died?
She said she would come again, so the boys tell me, and she thought I was someone she once knew.
The old man you know as Oracle brought this upon us, said Taliesin. I only hope I can make it right.
What are you talking about?
Seek Oracle, and tell him you've spoken to me. Tell him that it pleases me for you to know his story. That when you have heard it, promise me you will repeat it to no one. Do you agree to this?
I do.
Meg ran from the house, careened beside her, as the men appeared on the far hill. Other women streamed from the crofts and homes. Men working in the fields dropped their tools and joined the rush. Within minutes the hunters and the boys were surrounded. Campbell answered all questions, and Caswellan led Galen through the throng to where Meg waited. She moved forward, cupping Galen's face with her hands.
Are you well, my bonny lad?
Yes. She read the sorrow in his eyes and linked her arm in his for the long walk to the house. He had suffered so much in his life, and now it was obvious that he had endured more pain. Her heart ached for him. At the house, the crofter Dirk was waiting for Corrine. He asked for Galen and then left, taking the girl with him to walk up the hillside. Galen was exhausted and stumbled to his bed, while Caswellan and Meg sat together by the hearth. The clansmen told her of the ordeal in the mountains, and how well the boys had handled themselves.
He is a lad to be proud of, Caswellan, she said.
He grinned sheepishly.
I know. I was close to tears as you told me the tale. He'll be a fine man.
Sooner than you think, said Caswellan. And how did you fare with Campbell for so many days? He shrugged.
The man fears me, Meg. He thinks I plan to supplant Agwain with Galen. Is it not madness? His doubts must sit on his shoulders like a mountain.
He is a sad, lonely man. I'm glad you harbour no ill will.
How can I hate him? I grew up with him.
He was always the same. He believed his father liked me more than him. Always he strived to beat me, and he never did. Had I been wiser, I would have lost at least once. "It's not in you to lose," she said. "You are a clansman and a proud man. Too proud, I think. Can a man be too proud? It harms no one. I've never insulted another man or abused my strength by destroying a weaker opponent. I do not parade my talents, but I am aware of them." "Nonsense. You're as vain as a flamingo. I've seen you trimming your beard by the silver mirror and using my brush to comb it flat." "Spying on me now, is it?"
"Yes, it is. And why shouldn't I? Am I not your wife?"
He pulled her to his lap and kissed her. "Indeed, you are the best thing I ever stole from the Pallades, except for that bull of your father's."
"Well, I think that Intosh proposed to me," said Meg, tugging his beard, "and instead I ended with you. I wonder if the gods hold a grudge against my family."
"Intosh? He was my rival. You'd have hated it, Meg. The man has ticks in his bed. I was scratching for days after I stole his sword."
"You dog! So that's where they came from."
Now, Meg, my love," he said as she pulled from his grasp, eyes blazing. "Let's not have a row. The boy needs to sleep. He's been through much."
"You've not heard the last of this, my fine Farlan," she said softly.
"And now, while you're quiet for a moment,"
he said, pulling her to him once more,
"perhaps you'll welcome me home. It's been a tiring journey."
"Then you'll be wanting to sleep."
"Indeed I do. Will you join me?"
"You can bathe first. I'll have no more of your ticks."
"Is there any heated water?"
"There is not."
"You'd not expect me to bathe in the yard in the cold."
"Of course not. You can sleep down here and bathe tomorrow in the warm water."
"Sleep here?"
Their eyes met, and there was no giving her.
"It's the yard, then,"
he said.
Later, as Caswellan slept, Meg heard Galen moaning in his sleep in the next room. She rose quickly, wrapping a blanket around her naked body, and made her way to his bedside.
It was a familiar nightmare, and she knew he was once more running from the Aenir, his legs leaden, his wounds bleeding. She sat beside him, stroking his hair.
"It's all right, Galen," she whispered. "You're here with Meg. You're safe. Safe."
He groaned and rolled to his back.
"Meg?"
"I'm here."
"Dreaming,"
he whispered, and his eyes closed once more. She remembered the first time Caswellan had brought him home. He had been nervous then, and his eyes had flickered from wall to wall as if the house was a prison. And he had avoided her. When she showed him his room, his delight had stunned her.
"This is my room?"
"Yes."
"My very own? To share with no one?"
"Your very own."
"It's wonderful. Thank you."
"You are very welcome."
"You cannot bewitch me,"
he said suddenly. "I see," she said, smiling. "Caswellan has told you about my spells."
"Yes."
"But he didn't tell you my powers faded soon after we wed."
"No.
It happens to women once they've snared their men."
"I see,"
he said. "So, let us be friends. Who does that sit with you?"
"I'd like to be friends," he said, grinning. "I've never had friends."
"It'll be nice to have someone to talk to," she told him.
"I don't talk very much," he said. "I never had anyone to practice with. I'm not terribly clever at it."
"It's not clever that counts, Galen. Clever comes from the mind, truth from the heart. Now, I will begin our friendship by telling you the truth. When Caswellan first rescued you, I was worried, for we have a son. but I have thought long about it, and now I am glad, for I like you, and I know you will be happy with us. For our part, we will teach you to be a clansman.
I may not be very good at that either, admitted the boy.
It's not a matter of being good at it. Merely being is enough. It will not be easy for you, for Caswellan is not a popular man, and some will make it hard, perhaps even unpleasant for you.
Why is he not popular?
That is a complex question. He is independent, and it has made him all that he has. He holds to the old ways of raiding and stealing from other clans. But there are other reasons that I think it best you find out for yourself.
He is a thief, she chuckled.
Yes, just like you.
Well, I like him. I don't care about the others.
She laid a hand on his shoulder. Here is a first lesson for you, Galen. Care. That is what the clan is. We care for one another. Even if we dispute matters, we still care. I tell you this. If Caswellan's house burned to the ground, even those who disliked him would gather round and help rebuild. If Caswellan died, I would be cared for should I need it. If Caswellan and I both died, little Donal would be taken in by another family, perhaps one that disliked us both, and raised with love. He had been hard to convince, especially after the early trouble with Agwain, but at least he had found friends. Meg sat by the bedside for a while, then moved to the window. The moon was high, the mountain silver, the valley at peace. Behind her, Galen stirred and opened his eyes, seeing her silhouetted against the sky. Meg, he whispered. She returned to the bedside.
Yes? Thank you.
For what?
For caring.
Leaning down, she kissed his brow.
Sleep well, young warrior, she said.
Caswellan strode up towards the cave, aware that the old man was watching him. Oracle's sunken blue eyes looked hard at the clansman.
You look tired, man,
said Oracle, as Caswellan sat beside him in the cave mouth.
I am tired, and hurt by the suffering of those poor boys. A bad day, agreed the older man.
For a time they sat in silence. Then Oracle spoke again.
It is always good to see you, my boy, but I sense there is something on your mind, so spit it out.
Caswellan chuckled.
As always, you miss little.
Taliesin told me to speak to you. He said it would please him for you to tell the story of what happened beyond the gate.
Aye, please him and shame me.
Oracle stood and wandered back into the cave, sitting beside the glowing fire. Caswellan joined him. Oracle filled two clay cups with watered wine, passing one to the younger man.
I have told no one else this tale in 25 years. I trust you not to repeat it while I live.
You have my word on it, Caswellan assured him.
I wanted to be High King, said Oracle. I felt it was my right, after the battles I had led and won. But the people rejected me. This much you know already. I took my followers, and we overpowered the druids guarding the Valen Gate. We passed through. At first it seemed that nothing had changed. The mountains remained the same, High Druin still stood sentinel over the lands of the clans. But it was different, Caswellan. In a land beset by war, a woman had become High Queen. Her name was Sigarni. For reasons which I cannot explain now, but which you will understand later, I shall say no more about her, save that my men and I helped her in her battles with the Outland army. We stayed for 2 years. I still wanted to be a king, to found my own dynasty.